This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
It is the Tornado.
And Psychic Compass, ready to go. Make some predictions.
Yes, sir. And we have a lot of controversy to talk about, a lot of big news, some retirements, and an unretirement to talk about as well in MMA. We have Mayweather, Conor McGregor developments. We have an article that I want to discuss on the Bleacher Report about some concerns that the UFC is in decline. We have, let's see, here's a big one. Manny Pacquiao decided he didn't want to go with his promoter or some other promoter's idea of who's the best opponent for him, so he put it up for vote online. And Amir Khan won the sweepstakes, so we might see that fight as Manny's next fight, since it appears that he's out of contention for Conor. And that's one of the biggest stories this week is, apparently there were some rumors put out that there was an official deal. There was not an official deal yet, but, Floyd has put out a little, ultimatum that is classic Floyd. He says, put it out on Twitter, just, you know, following Trump's example. Everybody's going to talk about it, put it out on Twitter. So, says, listen, Conor McGregor, if you really want to get this fight done, take care of your business with the UFC and then have your people get in touch with my people. And the rumors that came out about this, and, you know, like the old saying, every rumor has a shred of truth to it. Mayweather had denied these rumors that him and McGregor had agreed to a deal to make the boxing match. And the problem supposedly was a third party, which would make sense, probably the UFC, because they have control over Conor's contract. So it's getting interesting, and obviously Mayweather and McGregor are talking, whether it's, you know, in public or in private. But yeah, Monday, a report surfaced that a contract had not been signed yet, but it was being held up by a third party. So obviously there's some money issues or some hesitation on Dana White's part, because he knows that McGregor could full well be going into this knowing he will lose and just wanting to do it for the sake of the money. Just like I talked about a couple weeks ago when I mentioned that Shannon Sharp and Skip Bayless on their show discussed this. And that was Shannon Sharp's theory, is that McGregor wants this opportunity to set precedent of a payday, so that even when he goes back to the UFC and fights in MMA, he can say, hey, I fought Floyd for this much, you gotta pay me this much for every fight. And it's an interesting argument that I actually have not seen a lot of in MMA circles, and I've read a lot of articles about it. So leave it to Shannon Sharp, a football player, to come up with that.
Well, you know, Stephen A. Smith had some interesting stuff on this too, and you know, I've been ignoring this whole thing.
Yeah, but that's the reality. It's going to happen.
Exhibition, I hesitate to call it a fight. But Stephen A. Smith had a good point. I mean, and the fact that it's still being talked about, Stephen A. Smith feels it's a hell of a lot closer to being made than we think. Because those of us, and I'll speak for all three of us, we know the gigantic task ahead of Conor McGregor for getting into the ring with Floyd Mayweather. There ain't no blueprint to beat him. And this is a guy who has never had one professional boxing match. I mean, I can't believe we're talking about this. For all his career, Mayweather has went up against guys that are in a boxing gym all the time, and that's their discipline, and they're the best at the world at it. They're not in the gym working on their ground game, their takedown defense, their kicks, any of that. It's just pure punching. And that's the highest level of boxing. And they couldn't land a glove on him for the most part. Now, here comes McGregor. I just don't see much chance in a pure boxing match. I think in the cage it's a whole other story, but that's not where this is supposed to happen. Well, the catch is, as Stephen Smith so astutely pointed out, those of us that are aficionados of this would probably agree, and I know I'm speaking for you two guys, if I'm out of line, let me know, but I just can't see McGregor doing much of anything. But you get the casual fans to think, well, hey, McGregor hits hard. Maybe he'll land a good shot. There's always that puncher's chance. And that's what they're banking on.
Right.
So I don't know what you guys think, because to me, I kept thinking, well, I was using some Jungian projection saying, well, who'd want to see that? But then again, everyone doesn't think like I do, so what do you guys think?
If leg kicks or something were involved, I'd say yes. But, yeah, I don't think McGregor has a shot in hell. I really don't. But I think the fight will be made. Just for fuck's sake.
You know what? I was thinking about it today when I was at the gym working out, and this kind of popped into my mind. As a fight, you know what fight kept coming up in my mind over and over and over? Was Mayweather's 2005 fight with Arturo Gatti. That's what I can kind of see happening here. Because Gatti fought the absolute wrong game plan. He tried to box them. He stayed on the outside. And Mayweather, you know, just picked them apart. Now, McGregor is going to try to put a lot of pressure on him. I'll give you that. He's not going to try to box him, obviously. But he is going to be so wide open because it's a different defensive game. You don't have to guard against takedowns. You don't have to guard against takedowns. You don't have to guard against kicks. But at the same time, a lot of your MMA fighters, they have a tendency to try to shoot in, just like a lot of amateur wrestlers, the grappling part of it. You might be able to strike, but you also, you know, you're also a lot of times picking weight up from your feet if you're trying to throw a kick. You're using your leg as a defense sometimes, and you're trying to attack square because you're going for a double leg takedown. You try to do that, you're toast. And, you know what, I was talking to a guy at the gym tonight, also a former boxer. We were talking about it. One of the things we said here is, I always joke when I have my two trainees over, Amy and Matt. And the one thing I tell them, especially Amy, she's out for a while. She broke her ankle, slipped on the ice. But here's one thing she would always say. And she'd be like, I would tell her to do something, and, you know, she would hesitate. I'm a video, and she, I'm catching myself thinking. And I'm like, listen to me. Do me a favor. When you come here, check your brain at the door, because I'll do the thinking. You don't think. You just do what I tell you. Don't think. Check your brain. And the same thing with Matt. Sometimes I catch him thinking. I'm like, guys, don't think. Let me do the thinking. I have a problem. That's what McGregor's going to do. He's just going to sit there and, you know, think a little bit. And when you think, because it's not natural, boom.
Yeah. And for those who think Mayweather doesn't have a punch, again, go back and rewatch that Diego Corrales fight.
Exactly.
That's my take. And if McGregor pulls this off, he will be the most talented human being I could imagine in I'm just trying to think of a comparison.
Yeah, if he pulls it off, it'll be a miracle. I mean, it'll be the best
miracle,
thing.
A miracle akin to the second coming.
It'll be the best thing since Jesus, right?
Without one proof, I can't believe we're discussing this.
Yeah.
I mean, Mayweather's not the champ, to be fair about that. If Mayweather was the champ, though, what an obscenity this would be. It would be like Tyson Fury wanting to fight Cain Velasquez.
Well, I did read something about the Nevada Athletic Commission saying there's still some hurdles left to make this one happen. I do know that Conor was able to get a California boxing license, but as we all know, Floyd does not like to fight far from home, and he lives in Las Vegas. So, and Showtime as well, too, which is probably going to carry this, is very loyal to Las Vegas when it comes to Floyd, too. So.
Well, I would say money could solve everything.
Another bad news for more bad news for boxing, or I suppose I should say football. This was funny because football is referred to around the world as, well, football, American football is different than where it is around the world, which is soccer, you know, what we call it. But everywhere else, football is soccer. So the headline was, heading footballs causes the same brain damage as boxing. And I said this to my girlfriend the other day. This is kind of weird. And I read her the headline, and she goes, who the hell would head a football? it's we're talking about soccer balls here, and a lot of guys head the football. I mean, that's how a lot of the goals get scored in these games that go forever and only 1 point is scored. You know, it's a header, usually.
That's what I was going to say. I thought you're more likely to get brain damage from soccer because in boxing, you're trying to duck the hit. In soccer, you don't have a helmet on like you do in football, American football, and that soccer ball is pretty damn hard. You're running to ram it with your skull. Of course you're going to get more brain damage in that sport.
So now we could have another big lawsuit with professional football players, as, and I say that as meaning soccer, for you American people who think I'm talking about NFL. I'm not talking about Tom Brady. I'm not talking about the Tyree catch off his helmet. I'm talking about fucking soccer. Okay. So anyway.
You got me thinking about headbutts. You know, in the early UFC days, those were legal.
Right.
And Mark Coleman was a maniac with those headbutts. I mean, he would get people mounted or even in their guard, and he'd just go on a rampage.
Yeah.
Woo! Thing.
So anyway, I'm just going to read the article. It was in the Telegraph, a UK newspaper. So it says that professional football is as risky as boxing in causing brain damage that can lead to dementia and early death, according to a new investigation. Scientists at University College London say years of hitting the ball can cause the same type of progressive damage as suffered by heavyweight prize fighters. They have called for urgent wide-scale research to establish whether repeated subconcussive head impacts caused by heading may also be prompting dementia in the amateur game. Meanwhile, the daughter of the former England striker Jeff Assell, who died of a degenerative brain disease aged 59, criticized the football authorities as indefensible and disgraceful in their response to the issue. Researchers conducted post-mortem examinations of the brains of five professional players and one committed amateur who had played for an average of 26 years and who had all suffered from dementia. They found evidence of CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, and it's also, which can be caused by repeated blows to the head and is a condition known to lead to dementia. And the rate of CTE in the footballers' brains was greater than the 12% average found in the general population. The players had also developed dementia around their mid-60s, an average of 10 years earlier than most people afflicted with the incurable disease. And the scientist who led the study said this was the first time CTE had been confirmed in a group of retired footballers. And she said these players had the same pathology as boxers. The most pressing question now is to ask how common dementia is among retired footballers. If we can demonstrate that the risk is higher than the normal population, then we need to look at putting preventive strategies in place. So maybe we're talking about some soccer helmets. That would be some funny shit. Today's research will be a spur to the growing campaign to force the Football Association to focus more on the dangers of heading. Critics say the sport's governing body has been slow to recognize the issue despite the long list of famous players who have suffered from dementia. And since nobody would recognize most of those names, I'm not going to read them. But, you know, obviously you get the case of this guy Assell, who died, and it was confirmed he had CTE, so... You've seen a lot of that with MMA fighters, too, with the concussions. But anyway, the bottom line, I guess, is they're going to do something about it, and it's been confirmed. It's a big problem. And if you're going to quit boxing, do not take up soccer. So, moral of the story. Don't quit boxing to start a soccer career. Unless you just refuse to head the ball. Anyway. Let's see. Getting back to some mixed martial arts stories. We got a couple retirements to talk about. And a couple, well, one big return. First of all, Brock Lesnar is officially retiring. God help us all, right? From martial arts for good. I think this has a lot to do with his steroids case and having to be suspended anyway. But it's just been all over the news this week that Brock Lesnar is all done. I, for one, really don't care. I didn't think he looked that great against Mark Hunt. And, you know, to know that he's on steroids too. And Mark Hunt is now suing him. It's probably not going to be a good scene for him if he loses that case and has to give up his whole purse. And that's his last fight on the books.
Yeah, because it did do Mark Hunt. That fine, like you brought up, and I never thought of that. Mark Hunt didn't get anything out of that fine. It went to the athletic commission. Should have went to Mark Hunt.
Right, and when guys don't make weight, sometimes part of the purse goes to the other guy. So, I mean, if a guy cheats in some other way, well, why not do the same thing? Philip Nover, also retiring, just after his appearance in UFC 208. And dropped a decision to Rick Glenn. He decided to retire. He won all three fights in the Tough House when he was on Season 8. And all by submission before he lost a decision to Efrain Escudero at the Tough 8 finale. And then he was cut from the UFC following two more losses, but worked his way back into the company after a stretch in which he won 5 out of 6 fights in Bellator and one on the indie circuit. He went 1-3 in his second UFC stint, with all of his losses going the distance, and he finished with a career record of 11-8-1. So, goodbye, Philippe. George St. Pierre, big news. Headed back to the UFC, he's agreed to terms. Is on the verge, supposedly, of signing a new multi-fight contract with the UFC, according to MMA Fighting. And, after months of on and off negotiations, they both agreed on terms of a new deal, and looks like he's demanding to face Michael Bisping. So that should be pretty interesting.
Also, he's coming back at 185.
And also, it has a boxing connection here, because apparently this all started to materialize as far as making nice and fixing this whole arrangement. When Dana White recently met with Freddie Roach, who works with St. Pierre a lot. And White didn't talk about the meeting at all. And then White told TSN last week in Brooklyn that the UFC has been talking to GSP and that me and GSP got everything straight between us. That's the quote. So, the deal is almost done and he wants to fight me, said Michael Bisping on Monday's episode of the MMA Hour. And he said, actually, that's one of St. Pierre's trainers told him. So, interesting.
Well,
stuff.
What about all these guys, these contenders at 185 that they're getting leapfrogged so much? That's interesting.
Well, I think once they make the announcement that George St. Pierre is coming back, I don't think they're going to throw him right in there right away. I think they're going to give him a few months, maybe an end of the year show. I mean, maybe a midsummer show or something. But I think Yoel Romero is already in line for Bisping, right? So I don't think they.
Well, I don't know if it's been signed.
Hmm. Well, I don't know. They might give GSP precedent and, you know, favoritism in that
well,
respect.
Just be leapfrogged him again. Well, it's about name recognition, I guess. It is a business.
We'll see. Another MMA story, kind of a bad boy of the week story. We used to do that a lot. This guy out in Hawaii has gone off the deep end. Another former Ultimate Fighter guy. He was in Season 6. A guy named Daniel Barrera. He was in a Hilo, Hawaii court answering charges of assaulting a high schooler. He was accused of trespassing on a high school wrestling practice and striking a female student wrestler on the back of the head. And he was then removed from court after yelling towards various members of the court and the gallery. And this is some pretty bizarre shit. And Friday, he was in court again, this time after being charged with first-degree terroristic threatening. Police officers were called to Hawaii Community Correctional Center, which was holding Barrera, Thursday evening. The police had responded to allegations from a facility nurse and a guard who claimed that Barrera had made a number of threats towards various individuals.
Not good.
But the judge himself. And when referring to the judge, Barrera told the guard, "He gonna get his one day."
And really not good.
Yeah.
Really not good. Oh,
then,
wow, you know, the wheels have come off him, huh?
Then he tells a nurse, "I was in the military and I killed guys, so I got no problem killing again." said he was going to get BJ Penn and reportedly made threats against J.D. Penn, the brother to the former UFC lightweight and welterweight champ. And I guess his anger towards the Penn brothers stemmed from an incident on Tuesday where he allegedly challenged the members of the Penn Training and Fitness Center to fight him. And then, of course, when he's in court on Friday, he again displayed some unusual behavior, according to the Tribune Herald, when he was notified by the district court judge that the media had requested to photograph the proceedings. Pereira responded with, "Yes, absolutely, fucking yes, please record, please, I'm a celebrity, I am a combat veteran, and yeah, I was on the Ultimate Fighter 6, baby, I'm a singer, I do commercials." That's all quotes. So, then he had a bunch of sheriff's deputies around him as he sat through the proceedings, but he was disruptive when the judge discussed mental examinations with Deputy Prosecutor Glenn Sheegee. He said, "You already got four of them." And the judge approved requests to have Barrera mentally examined and ordered him to appear in court again on February 28th. His bail was set at $50,000. And he faces up to 5 years in prison for the terroristic threatening. And, of course, they had to put the caveat in there that he is innocent until proven guilty. But sounds to me, if all that's true, he is definitely in need of some psychological help. And, unfortunately, we just talked about it. It could be one of those situations, you know, it sounds a lot like the symptoms of CTE when people get this bad. And they've been in some fights, especially losing fights, I think. The guy that hasn't had a very successful career. So, sometimes those guys have the worst cases of it. Sounds like he might be suffering from some of the stuff involved with that. But definitely has not a lot of impulse control. Yikes. And we haven't talked about the UFC's antitrust lawsuit in a while, but there is somewhat of a development there. On Valentine's Day, a report was filed on Law 360. I can't get the whole thing because you got to subscribe, but first couple of paragraphs here, interesting. Basically, a judge ruled on Monday that the UFC cannot assert attorney-client privilege regarding two sets of documents involving contract and merchandising negotiations in the proposed class action suit. Antitrust claims against the UFC. And Zuffa tried to say that the contract negotiations with a fighter and discussions about a clothing line company promotion contained confidential legal advice, but the company did not make a prima facie showing to that effect. So, must be some pretty juicy stuff in those documents if there's that big of a fight over it, and it has to do with the Reebok deal, it sounds like, so I'm definitely going to try to get some updates on that before the next show. And of course, we got to talk about that great fight that Tom was kind enough to send me from YouTube. Abel Ramos versus Ivan Baranchik. And I'll tell you, that was not the best example of boxing. But organized brawling is sometimes effective for some fighters when the other guy can't take being pushed around. And that's exactly what happened, because Abel was doing pretty good in the first few rounds, and I noticed a lot of times Baranchik was getting hit because he's coming in with his head looking down at the mat. And if you watch that fight and you look for that, you'll see it. In a lot of the early rounds, he does it way more than he does it in the later rounds. And he was very flat-footed in the early rounds, too. But then once Ramos had taken a few shots and sat down a couple times, it changed. It changed for him. He definitely got to that point where he was losing his will to get the win. And I thought that was an incredible comeback for Baranchik. But I also thought, you know, for a guy that supposedly trains at Wild Card Gym, this guy needs a lot of work. So, I don't know. They conspicuously didn't mention whether Freddie Roach had anything to do with his training. They just said Wild Card Gym. But it looked like it was a couple Russians in his corner.
Yeah, I didn't see Freddie in his corner either.
No, so.
You gotta wonder, because I would think that if he was really a hot prospect, Freddie would be there. Freddie's not afraid to leave L.A. for a fight. I've seen him in Las Vegas with Brian Valoria, I believe, was the flyweight from years ago.
Brian Valoria, the Hawaiian Punch.
Right, and Freddie was in the corner one night.
That was actually one of the very first fights I ever wrote about online. Was one of Brian Valoria's fights on Versus at the time. It's not even called that anymore. I don't even think that station is around anymore. Anyway, we had some other boxing matches last week too. Rafshe Warren lost to some guy named Zakhayanov. Let's see. Nothing really else too huge. Let's see what we got this week. The big one this week, got a couple of them. Adrian versus Adrian. Adrian Broner versus Adrian Granados. We got Marcus Brown versus Thomas Williams Jr. We got a big female fight with Cecilia Brekhus. We got that whole full schedule in front of us here. Yeah, that's actually next week. Let's look at what we got. I'm sure we'll find the Jesus fight of the week. And of course, we've got some UFC fights to talk about, upcoming and past, that we missed because we didn't do the show last week. But here's one right off the bat in Costa Mesa, California. It's actually going on tonight. I don't see that it's on any TV station, but pretty interesting main event here. Light heavyweights Mike Lee, 18-0, and Justin Thomas, who's 18-1. Pretty big one there. And the co-main event is kind of a dud. We've got Carlos Lacona versus Cesar Sesteda. And Carlos is 8-0. Cesar is 3-3. It's not much of a co-main event there. That's a pretty good fight. Let's see what else we got. Into Friday now. Roy Jones Jr. versus Bobby Gunn happening tomorrow night in Wilmington, Delaware. Two former guests going at it for the vacant World Boxing Foundation cruiserweight title.
Is that going to be on ESPN?
I don't think so, but it's another former guest of ours promotion, David Feldman. So I wouldn't be surprised if it gets sold after the fact somehow.
Rich, if you can catch it online, Rich, let me know.
I have been posting stuff on our website about it, and I'm pretty sure the weigh-in is today, so there'll be something on there tonight about it. But I would think that they'd have to have some kind of pay-per-view link online to do it through, being something that's not in Atlantic City or Las Vegas or California. It's probably hard to get TV companies, but they would probably do something online. And I will send you guys a link to it if I can find it. But they might even have it on the site that I usually watch the UFC fights on, too. So get it for free that way. But anyway, Roy Jones Jr. comes in at 64-9, and Bobby Gunn comes in at 21-6 with one draw. But if you believe him and all his buddies, he's undefeated in bare-knuckle boxing since then, and he's had over, I think, 90 fights or something, so it's pretty ridiculous. But anyway, coming back from that much time off, while Roy Jones Jr., as bad as he's been in the last couple fights, is, staying at more, a little bit more active, this is going to be an interesting one.
Well, maybe they both need a payday.
Yes, well... Yeah. I think you need to take the maybe off that, Tom. I think it's
pretty
sure they need a payday. I mean, I'm sure Roy makes a lot of money doing his promotional stuff, but I doubt that he'd turn a payday down like this. And it's probably one of the best people that he's faced in a very long time, so I am interested in seeing how this one comes out. And
I was saying, Joe, the promotion, I think you said either, I couldn't tell which Feldman you said, David or Damon,
But their father, Artie Feldman, who trained guys like Frank the Animal Fletcher and Prince Charles Williams, just passed away yesterday at the age of 53. You know, he was a well-known figure out of the Philadelphia area.
Oh, that sucks. So, you know, obviously they'll be devoting some time to that, probably giving him a 10 count and all that good stuff. But, yeah, it's unfortunate. But the Feldman brothers have had a little bit of controversy in their past, but, you know, they've always been close to the boxing. So trying to do all kinds of things, not only regular boxing, but celebrity boxing. And I think it was through one of the Feldmans that I got the Rodney interview there. Why am I drawing a blank on his last name?
That's when you were trying to get Rodney King.
Rodney King, yeah. Rodney King. Yeah, I got Rodney King. Before he died at the bottom of a pool, I got his interview.
He passed away. He was trying to get one of them celebrity boxing deals.
Yeah, he did do it. He came through it and did a couple times, but he didn't get his chance to box the former officer there that beat the shit out of him with the fucking billy club. He missed out on that chance. The guy wimped out, I guess. But anyway. Getting back to this card, the co-main event is Kanat Islam. He's 22-0, fighting Robson Assis, who is 16-3. And then Frankie D'Alba, he comes in with 20 wins, 2 losses, and 2 draws at super featherweight. By the way, Islam versus Assis is at super welterweight. D'Alba at super featherweight is fighting German Mraz. And how about this guy's record? 55 wins, 41 losses, and 1 draw.
Yikes. Well, he has a lot of experience. He's very, very experienced. I guess that would be his, what do they give, like a little resume? They got 3 or 4 attributes. That would have to be number one. Very experienced.
Yes. And let's see, we still got Friday fights here. Getting into Saturday. There. Yet. Gonna go to page 2. Rockshark is being slow tonight. Alright, page 2. Nothing huge yet. Got our mismatch of the week, I think. Over in Latvia on Saturday, we got a light heavyweight fight between Andres Pokamiko, who was 10-12. It's hard to believe this guy's in the mismatch of the week, but he's fighting a guy named Stanislav Sergeyev, who's 0-0-1. He's had one draw. One draw against a guy who's had 22 fights with 10 wins.
Well, you know, I would tell the guy with one draw, don't worry about it, kid. He ain't fought no one like you.
Okay, you haven't tasted defeat yet.
That's right. There you go. You haven't learned how to lose. He has. Reintroduce him to that world. You got it. Go get him.
Well, then we got one in Poland. On Saturday, Damian Wyrzyszynski, he's 10-0-1, facing a guy, Alexander Abramenka, who's got a record of 17 wins, 56 losses, and 1 draw. Yikes.
1 draw. Wow.
And pretty decent card here from Russia. I don't think Donald Trump's going to be in attendance, but it's... It's at the Tractor Sport Palace over there in Chelyabinsk, Russia. And main event is Cruiserweights Yuri Kashinsky, 10-0, against Krystijan Krstakic. Probably butchering that. He is 13-0, and it's for the vacant WBO Oriental Cruiserweight title. Because, you know, both those guys sound Oriental. then you've got Super featherweights Shavkat Rakhimov, 8-0, fighting Rogelio Jun Doliguez, who is 21-3-2. And that is for the vacant WBC Eurasia Pacific Boxing Council super featherweight title. Lightweights, Rustam Nagaev, 28-7-1, fighting Firuzbek Yildishev, who's 8-1, for the WBC Asian Boxing Council silver lightweight title. Another two guys who don't sound Asian.
His name didn't sound too Asian to me.
And we got super bantamweight Murad Arslanov. He is 7-0, fighting Andre Isayu, who is 30 wins, 7 losses is his record. And the WBC Eurasia Pacific Boxing Council super bantamweight title is on the line there. And finally, one more title on the line in lightweight fight, Muhammad Kahuja Yakubov. Yikes. Good luck.
Wow, what a title, huh?
Good luck to the announcer on that one. He is 5-0 going in against Yogli Herrera, who is 28-17.
Now, Rich, I do have a question about that. Is Putin going to the event?
Yeah, probably. Probably.
Well, now, could you imagine...
Oh, he's actually on a spy ship off the coast of Connecticut right now. He's out there to pick up Mike Flynn.
Well, here's an even bigger one now. Imagine if Trump would say he was going to promote... detente's an old world, but to promote a new... to restart the relationship with Russia, he's going to attend the fights with Putin. Imagine that. Could
that
you imagine the media frenzy?
That would be funny. But actually, there has been a story circulating this week in MMA media that Donald Trump still believes that Fedor is the best fighter ever. And he is a huge Fedor fan. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that he was invested in Affliction at the time that Fedor was connected with them. And... he made him a little money at that point before the thing collapsed, I bet. But, he's met him before, and, obviously Putin loves Fedor, so maybe that could be a connection point.
Well, there you go. A man after international peace here. Fedor could have a whole new career as a diplomat. He is a very special person. There's something about him. I told you, when I seen him in Las Vegas, when I shook hands, I was going to say, wow, it's actually flesh, but I punked out. That wouldn't have been right. I just kind of gave him a bow and said, good luck in your next fight. And I'm sure he didn't understand a word I said, but I'm sure he read my body language and my vocal tone. But, he was a very special person in his prime.
Yeah, I mean, my theory was always that the UFC should have done whatever it took to get him in there, because he was at the point in his career then, when he had a shot to go in the UFC, that any UFC heavyweight would have destroyed him, I thought. And the UFC just balked at it because of the M1 connection and having to co-promote with M1. They didn't want to do it. But if they had done it then and exposed Fedor, it would have been a lot tougher for him to go out and claim that he's the best in the world. But when he didn't have to fight the prime talent at the UFC, people still believed he was the best in the world for the longest time. And maybe he was in his prime, but in his later years, he got lucky a lot, and he fought a lot of guys that were poorly matched.
Things were going downhill. You remember you had that Strikeforce fight on CBS. Remember they showed the card, and he was behind against a big black guy that's in jail now. I can't think of his name, but he was having a hard time until he landed that punch.
Yeah.
And I knew he was starting to slip a bit then.
So,
2008-ish, if I remember right.
Getting back to boxing here. In your neck of the woods, Tom, we've got a big fight coming up on Saturday. And it's a co-promotion between Mayweather Promotions and Adrian Broner's About Billions Promotions. And even though they had a little bit of a back and forth after his last bout there... the big one here is Adrian Broner versus Adrian Granados. I thought it was supposed to be for a title, but now they're saying no title.
What city is it in?
It's in Cincinnati, Ohio.
That's way on the other side of the state. I was hoping it'd be Cleveland.
Well, Adrian comes in at 32-2. Adrian Broner, actually, and then Adrian Granados comes in at 18-4-2. We've also got light heavyweights Marcus Brown and Thomas Williams Jr. going at it. Marcus comes in at 18-0, undefeated. Williams comes in at 20 wins, 2 losses, with 2 of those losses coming in his last 6 fights. So this is probably going to be a good one for Marcus here to step up the ladder a little bit. But the main event is actually a little bit better fight for the WBA World Welterweight title. David Avanesyan, who is 22-1-1, fighting Lamont Peterson, who is 34-3-1. And his last 2 losses have come in his last 6 fights, too. So he is looking to string together a couple wins with this one. We've also got Santos Benavidez, 25-11-2, at super welterweight, fighting Jermonte Clark, who is 10-0. So pretty good fight card all around there. And that's not all. We got one in Houston, Texas on Tuesday before the next show. Miguel Flores fighting Dat Nguyen. This one's going to be on Fox Sports 1. And this is one of the best fights I've seen on these Tuesday cards. And I've seen Dat Nguyen live in action in Boston. Got to interview him after one of his earlier fights. Yeah, he actually was trained, I think he still is, by, what's his name? Just drawing a blank, of course, but where's fancy? He might have been. I want to say the black guy. I remember he had some crazy sunglasses. Used to fight himself, and his son fought. Well, I don't know why I'm drawing a blank on it. He begins with a B. Just can't think of him. Anyway. Miguel Flores is his opponent at super featherweight. Flores comes in at 21-0. That is 19-3. Buddy McGirt. That's who trains him. Or used to train him. I knew it started with a B. And co-main event here is Darwin Price at super lightweight, 11-0, fighting Highland Williams Jr., who's 16-3-1. We also got super bantamweights Brandon Figueroa, 10-0, and Raul Chirino, who is 10-4. And that about does it for this week's big boxing schedule. So for one more in Russia on Thursday, next Thursday when we're doing the show here. There's actually 2 cards the same night in Russia, but the other one's not even worth mentioning. But might as well talk about this one. It's a WBA World Light Heavyweight title on the line in the main event. It's Dmitry Bivol, who's 8-0, and Robert Berich, who is 29-5-1. We've also got featherweights Valery Tretiakov, who's 8-0, fighting Eugene Lagos, who's 11-2-2, and Sergey Kuzmin at heavyweight, 8-0, fighting Vaclav Pedsar, who is 11-3. That one's for the vacant WBC Eurasia Pacific Boxing Council heavyweight title. And then, if that's not enough, we've also got the vacant Russia featherweight title on the line between Nikita Kuznetsov, 6-0, and Evgeny Smirnov, who is 8-0. I don't know if he's going to be drinking Smirnov before the fight.
Great minds think alike. I was about to say something on that one. A great name.
And then next Friday, we'll talk a lot more about this next Thursday, but the big main event is in Quebec City, Canada, Elider Alvarez versus Lucien Bute. Big fight, light heavyweight. Alvarez coming in at 21-0, Bute coming in at 32-3-1. And kind of a weird fight in the middle of this card at middleweight for 2 titles. The IBF International Middleweight title and the WBO NABO Middleweight title. And it's Francis Lafreniere, who is 14-5-2, against Marcus Willis, who is 17-4-2. So kind of a weird fight there. The co-main event looks like heavyweights Eric Martel Beholy, who is 11-6-1, fighting Adam Braidwood, who is 6-1. Does it for that schedule. We gotta go over to Sure Doggy. And let's just start right off talking about Jermaine Randami versus Holly Holm and the controversy with that one. She has now called for an appeal of the result due to late strikes from Randami. So, some interesting developments there, but I'm not sure if she has a very good chance of getting that overturned.
Yeah, I there was a lot of talk about that referee. A lot of talk. I mean, if you're going to keep warning someone all night without doing anything, I mean, I thought the general rule was one warning, if it's fairly flagrant, you could still get away with one warning, but not two. And I don't even think there was a warning the first time it happened.
Right. Well, the decision was unanimous, 48 to 47, so obviously if a point had been taken away, it would have been a tie. And I will give it to Holly that the very first time it happened after the second round, she was stunned. It did affect her positioning in the fight, and it affected her resolve and her ability to get in there and trade punches in the beginning of the next round. But at the same time, if you watch that next round, Randami really didn't get that aggressive until at least a minute into that next round. So she kind of gave her a break. Not that that should be given any consideration, but...
you're reaching a little bit there, but...
But she did kind of lay off. I mean, she apologized. She laid off her a little bit. And then, you know, Holly seemed to have enough time to clear her head. And then the next time it happened, Holly blocked just about all those punches. And if anything landed, it was a glancing blow. So I look to the final announcement of the score. And if you watch that and you watch Holly Holm's face, she doesn't say, oh shit, or oh damn. She doesn't act like she's disappointed in anything but herself. And I think that says volumes, because I don't think she won that fight, you know, bottom line. Whether, you know, you could argue that that one extra two punches at the end of the round helped her lose it. I don't know. I mean, you could argue either way, but the bottom line is she didn't perform well enough to get that win. And I wish I had 5 minutes with Holly Holm right now, because I just watched the fight like 20 minutes before the show. And I got some critiques for her. First of all, she was very good at distance. When she got in close, she tended to want to try to take Randami down. And with a girl who has that kind of Muay Thai conditioning and skill, you're going to be susceptible to knees. So if you're going to be in close, I think the best thing she could have done, she didn't do until the fifth round, and that was throw elbows to the head. And she landed a couple on Randami in the fifth round, but I didn't see any even thrown before then. So instead of going for the takedowns in that position, you got to use your reach with your elbows. Whenever your elbow's free, throw an elbow at her head. Because the knees, I mean, she could barely block Randami's knees, and she only landed a few of her own. The other thing...
I'm surprised Winklejohn and Jackson didn't pick up on that.
I think they were screaming for elbows at that point, but I didn't hear them before then. Because once they realized in that fifth round that she could land a couple of them, they were asking for them more and more. But the other thing that Holly did is when she come in with punches, this is why she landed the fewest of her strikes to the head, punches, punch-wise. When she came in with punches, she would do a lot of the 1-2s, and what worked for her was when she followed up the 1-2, you know, hit or miss, with the leg kick. That was perfect, because, you know, if you look at Randami, she actually has targets where her tattoos are. She had the one on her left leg, right about above the knee, right where Holm was kicking her on the side, a little bit to the side of where the tattoo is, and then she's got the tattoo on the side of her body, on that same left side. And Holly was capitalizing on every opening she could get with Randami's body, with the kicks, body and leg. And Holly should have done that every chance she got with the 1-2s. If she missed, throw that leg kick. If she hit, throw that leg kick afterwards. And by the time the fifth round came around, if Holly was doing that every round, then she could get in a long-range striking battle with Randami and win. But she showed a lot of flash in the fifth round, but it was too little too late, because she hadn't worn Randami down, and then she got so involved in that clinching game, instead of using her distance, and I really think she is a better striker than Randami, but she threw a lot of unnecessary head kicks and spin kicks that weren't connecting, and it was a lot for defense more so than offense, and where she was landing on offense was the leg kicks and the body kicks. So, one more critique for Holly. She did a lot of the, with the clinching, you know, trying to trade knees, too. That was another thing that I noticed that she probably shouldn't have gone and tried to do with a girl who had that much Muay Thai experience. You know, just not only not getting close enough to get the takedown or get enough leverage to get the takedown and grapple, which was the problem with Randami going in, but also just trying to sit there and trade knees was not a good idea. But
you
she
know,
did land one nice head kick.
Thread, after that fight, comparing Holly to Buster Douglas, that did she? Because you look at Buster Douglas, and before the Tyson fight, he was just—you just kind of sensed something was missing. The effort wasn't there, maybe at times, and the conditioning wasn't there. And then all of a sudden, he pulls off what he did that night. And then it was never the same. Now, I think that's a stretch to put Holly in that category. But she is on a three-fight losing streak now. So the question is, did she catch Ronda at the right time?
Right. Well, I thought also this was kind of a weird fight because every time they showed Holly from the back, she looked a lot like Ronda with the hair up in the bun like that. It was kind of funny. But, yeah, she's... She's got the strength in the striking, obviously, on her feet, but, you know, Randami also has a lot of kickboxing experience, so the thing about trying to box with a girl like that is, you know, you've got to use your reach more. And when you're boxing like that, putting your head down and then rushing in to grapple, you're not going to land a lot of shots. And she took a lot of shots to her eye area because of that, too, because when you kind of put your head down at an angle like that, it opens up your eyebrows pretty nicely to punches from your opponent, especially if your hands are down. So at some point along the line, Holly has lost her good hands-up defense from her boxing days, and she should be integrating that more with the leg kicks, because that was perfect. If you watch the first couple rounds, whenever she went for that 1-2 leg kick, she landed that hard. And that's what you do with a striker. If you want to get into a striking competition with somebody over five rounds, you have time to wear down that front leg, you do it. And that's one of the things I see in a lot of MMA fights. Guys just do not leg kick enough, and they spend so much time in range for them because they're trying not to, you know, get into a brawl and waste energy on punches that aren't going to land. But the leg kick can land every time on that front leg, and Holly was slamming it when she did land it. So
right, and even if it doesn't land, your opponent's aware of it.
Yes.
Even if it doesn't, I mean, it's just a whole other dimension. But yeah, and I also understand that the new 145-pound champ is not overly anxious when the name Christine Cyborg came up. She didn't seem. It was like, well, I guess, but you know, right now, you know, that kind of stuff.
Oh, I think Cyborg destroys Randami. Destroys her. Because she won't go for, you know, being denied a takedown, number one. And when she grapples, she's going to end up in a submission. If she can get it over Randami. Because she's the type of person that has enough muscle and leg strength to pick Randami right up off the ground and drop her. And Holly was just trying to lean on her up against the cage a lot and pull her legs out from under at a 45-degree angle. She didn't have the strength to pick her right off her damn feet. But Cyborg can do that. And if it comes down to a brawl, one or two punches from Cyborg is going to rattle the hell out of Randami. She does have a little bit more reach, I think, than Cyborg, but, you know, the strength difference, I think, is incredible.
No matter how we look at it, physicality means something.
It's long and lanky versus short and stocky there, and it's not in the way like the fight I saw with Pudzianowski versus Tim Sylvia, because both of these girls have a lot of experience, so... It's going to be interesting.